South Asia as its government tries to reshape the country into a Hindu state. In marginalizing and maligning its minority Muslims at home, Mr. Modi's government has weakened India's traditional leadership role of encouraging harmony in a region of many fault lines. The shift could also open opportunities for China, which has used the promise of investment and access to its hard-charging economy to cultivate stronger relations with its rivals' neighbors.
Now, recently, we've seen Hindu groups attack mosques, ransack shops and homes owned by Muslims in the Indian state of Tripura after anti-Hindu riots in Bangladesh. Doesn't that seem that anti-Muslim violence is now being normalized in India?
Yeah. So, what does it look like when anti-Muslim violence is being normalized? I mean, are mobs roaming free without arrest? That's happening in Tripura. Are those who spoke out against violence being harassed by the authorities? That's happening in Tripura. Are the police being accused of participating in the violence? That's happening in Tripura. And look, everything that happened in Tripura was instigated by the VHP, an affiliate of the RSS, which, remember, is the grassroots Hindu supremacist root of the BJP. And why do I point this out? Because you need to understand, it's politically necessary for the BJP to keep Hindus angry and distracted. Thus, for as long as the BJP seeks or holds power, anti-Muslim violence is always going to be normalized.
Last but not least, Mr. Hussain, how has the India of Jawaharlal Nehru and Maulana Abul Kalam Azad changed since 2014 when Narendra Modi's right-wing Bharatiya Janata Party came to power?
The vision of Nehru and Abul Kalam was of a united India, but that vision has been bloodied by the butcher of Gujarat coming into power. So for those in India, whether Muslims or Hindus or Sikhs or so on, for those in India who want to see a united India, they have to start by kicking out the BJP. And for those of us outside of India, those of us who want to support the oppressed victims of the BJP, we need to be united and organized. We need to stay updated through channels like Press TV, and we need to join organizations like MPAC UK.
Thank you for your time, Mr. Hussain. Hope to have you back on the program again.
Thank you for having me.
Now, let's see how people have reacted on social media.
New Delhi-based journalist Sagrika Kisu, commenting on recent events in India's industrial city Gurgaon, notes that 108 open spaces for Muslim prayers have come down to 20 in 3 years. Steve Hank, economist at Johns Hopkins University, cites the case of popular Indian Muslim comedian Munawwar Farooqi, who had to cancel 12 shows in 2 months due to threats by Hindus. Journalist and TV anchor Srinivasan Jain says the violent radicalized majority has taken over the country, while referring to vandalization of a school in one Indian state.
And that was our episode about the US-China competition in wooing important Indian Ocean littoral states like Bangladesh and the marginalization of Indian Muslims by the nationalist Hindu government. We shall meet again next week. So till then, take care.
In the limelight. After a cocktail of home refurbishments, Christmas parties and COVID, all eyes are on next week's North Shropshire by-election. The news analysis you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnists Rowena Mason, Jessica Elgott and Aubrey Allegretti. The piece is titled, Keys in the Ignition for Tory Leadership Challenge to Johnson. Stay with us for more. Only 2 months ago, the talk among Tory MPs, echoing some newspaper front pages, was about how Boris Johnson wanted to go on and on, lasting longer than Margaret Thatcher's 11 years in power. At that time, they dismissed the idea that he was a dilettante prime minister who really wanted to retire and write books, give after-dinner speeches on how hard the job was, and make loads of money in the process. But that has all changed, with successive scandals over his handling of sleaze allegations and Tory insiders now openly questioning his future. Tory backbenchers are not just fuming about Christmas parties and Downing Street refurbishments, but also about the way, in their perception, Boris Johnson has squandered the party's poll lead and put their seats in danger. All eyes are on the by-election in the formerly safe seat of North Shropshire next week. It would take more than 50 MPs writing a letter of no confidence in Johnson, 15% of the 361 Tory seats in Parliament, to trigger a leadership challenge. But an unexpected by-election loss could trigger more submissions to the 1922 committee, the keeper of the letters. One MP summarises the situation thus. Are there more than 50 MPs who have submitted a letter of no confidence in the Prime Minister? No. Are there more than 50 MPs who think he's doing the job extremely badly? Undoubtedly, yes. Most believe it is a long way off, with no knockout blow to Boris Johnson yet so far, but any leadership challenge would be likely to come from a so-called stalking horse candidate, someone with no hope of winning, who does not mind being vilified for being the first to wield the knife. After that, the serious contenders, the likes of Cabinet Ministers Rishi Sunak, Liz Truss and Sajid Javid, or an outsider such as Tom Tuggenhat, could potentially swing into action. Tellingly, all of Boris Johnson's top team have been keen to distance themselves from the No. 10 party's stories in recent days. On Friday morning, 10th of December, Liz Truss, the Foreign Secretary, told the BBC, "Last Christmas, I was spending my time getting trade deals. We were busy working on trade deals." Supporters of Boris Johnson believe he can turn things around if he can make it through to Christmas with no further major revelations about lockdown-busting antiques in Downing Street. But with rumours of other parties abounding, that may be a big if. One former Conservative No. 10 adviser was pessimistic. "He's an agent of chaos and he's no good at running anything. People are saying he needs to get a grip, but that's not going to happen." On whether Conservative MPs would make a move against the Prime Minister, he said, "He got them their seats, but he may cost them their seats. If we're still in this situation in 6 months' time, I can see him going." One former minister said they had dismissed stories about letters being submitted, but had now begun to take the threat to Boris Johnson seriously. "I've had about 6 emails from constituents. That's not a flood. But MPs do start to listen when they come in from people who aren't the usual troublemakers who hate you, especially if they are personal." Another MP said their colleagues would probably take some time to think during the Christmas break. "People will start to think, it's only potentially a year till the next election. I need to think about my leaflets, my fundraising, and does Boris Johnson help or hinder? If people decide the latter, then we don't hang about like Labour do." Gavin Barwell, a former chief of staff to Theresa May, who is now a Tory peer, has also highlighted a trio of issues that he believes have the potential to bring the Prime Minister down: the Downing Street parties, the flat refurbishment, and the anger of backbenchers over a return to COVID restrictions. However, others believe the discontent among Johnson's ranks is not as severe as it was for Theresa May, who was toppled by her own party. The party is pretty ruthless, one cabinet minister said, but I'm not getting the sense that this is anything like the days before the no-confidence vote in Theresa May. Cabinet has some disagreements, but compare it to what came before. It's chalk and cheese. Even so, there was a consensus that Tory MPs would make a move if they felt the opinion polls had turned convincingly in Labour's favour or their own local areas appeared to be lost causes. A senior MP told The Guardian they believed the party had already lost my seat, so felt ungovernable. Another said there had been an erosion of authority. Boris Johnson has become politically toxic to the electorate, the MP said. They think the Prime Minister's incompetent and a liar, and the parliamentary party isn't far behind. His incompetence personified. Others in this camp said they were not going to put a letter in to call for Boris Johnson's resignation at this stage, but were gradually being convinced it might be necessary if things deteriorate further. The key is in the ignition, said one of Boris Johnson's own ministers.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example.
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful,
Welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. Please stay tuned.
تدبر براتون مثال بزنم ملموس. مردم نیکی اونه.
Today I want to give you an example of true pondering upon the ayahs of the Quran. Kindness is when you give away from what you love. Hazrat Fatima Zahra Salamullah alayha gave her wedding robe to a needy person. She gave her food 3 nights to the needy. Why? Because she pondered upon the Quran when reading Ayah 92 of Surah Ali Imran, which says, "You will never attain piety until you spend out of what you hold dear. And whatever you may spend of anything, Allah indeed knows it." When reading this Ayah, she thought about what she likes the most. Another example is about a farmer at the time of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, who had a big green garden full of trees and wells of water. Once the farmer went to the Prophet and asked to donate his garden to Prophet by saying, "I want to spend out of what I like the most." Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, in answer to his request, stated, "What you do is a profitable deal with Allah. However, I suggest you to donate this garden first to your needy close relatives and family members, because they are in need of that." From this action of the farmer, we learn to donate and spend out of what we like the most. This is the true meaning of infaq, based on Ayah 92 of Surah Ali Imran. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Rafi'i. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We'll leave you in Allah's care.
Food for thought.
Salam, and let us ponder today on how to dress in public, as expounded to us by the embodiment of dignity, Imam Ali, peace upon him. He whose dress is chosen by knowledge will have his defects screened from people.
if you're interested to know about history, culture, family, politics, religion, art, etc., you wouldn't want to miss the chance to tune into the IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With delight.
Scientists in Brazil have come up with a creative way to shore up the population of a majestic species of monkeys in danger of extinction. Brazilian conservationists have constructed a bridge to reconnect two sides of Rio de Janeiro's Atlantic forest. The road had effectively isolated a group of lion tamarins, but it now offers hope for the threatened monkey. There are only 2,500 golden tamarins left in the wild, all of them in Brazil. It is estimated that these animals have lost more than 95% of their habitat.
Childhood joy and lightness meet with art at a first-of-its-kind museum in Rome, Italy. Here, all kinds of art decorations are made of balloons. The exhibit dubbed Let's Fly displays a broad range of interactive artworks. In one installation, visitors are invited to find their inner child by diving into a pool of hundreds of small balloons. In another section, giant inflatable sculptures double as a playground for kids. Some installations move only by riding a bicycle. The museum is a place where artists and spectators coexist for a journey into a world of inflatable art capable of freeing the imagination of all ages.
It's the combination of art with childhood and adolescence that makes this place so magical. So they are art installations, but also games. The blurred line between the two is what makes the museum so unique.
The balloon exhibit incorporates innovative works created by 14 different artists from across Europe. The artifacts were created using hundreds of thousands of biodegradable balloons. Organizers say they want to increase environmental awareness by being eco-friendly, as all the artworks will be reused or recycled. The exhibit will run until March the 5th.
Chinese students receive a science lesson on their country's space station, and they are lucky enough to receive it firsthand from the astronauts living in the first and core module of the station.
The class was held via a live broadcast shown on the state television. The three astronauts gave a lecture that focused on physics. They explained how the weightlessness environment affects the movement of objects. The astronauts also gave a tour of the station they arrived at in October for a six-month stay. It seems that their teachings were quite motivating. The students peppered their instructors with questions, including those about living conditions in space. China launched its space station in April and plans to complete it by the end of the next year. Christmas is just around the corner, and children are waiting for their presents. In Guatemala, Santa Claus has a new mode of transport to give gifts to children with cancer.
Today, as in the past year, we are celebrating Christmas with the cancer patients of the shelter. Santa Claus came in a helicopter to give presents to the children. It is very emotional for the children. The majority of them have never been so close to a helicopter, let alone Santa Claus.
That was an exciting experience for the children. The charity event was organized by an institute that supports cancer patients for remote areas in Guatemala. The institute says the event aimed to help the children go through their therapies with more ease. The Amazon River turtles are in danger of extinction, but environmentalists have come up with an initiative to save their lives, and that's by protecting their eggs. Climate change and human activities against their ecosystem have been putting these creatures at risk. Now, what the biologists and local volunteers do is that they recover the turtle nests from riverbanks during the rainy season to protect them from drowning. Then they take care of the baby turtles until they develop a hard shell and are ready to start their life journey. Batches of tiny turtles release into a river in the Amazon border between Bolivia and Brazil. They are now grown enough to protect themselves against different threats. Environmentalists have been doing this for more than 20 years, saving millions of baby turtles. This time they released 1 million of the little turtles. During the Christmas season, people around the world love to add a dose of joy in the form of Santas. Children especially feel ecstatic to see Santas distributing presents and snacks. But you'll be amazed to see how one Santa this time dives into water to give well-behaved sharks and fishes their goodies. In Malta's National Aquarium, Scuba Claus, helped by an elf, plunges into a huge fish tank with his sack of treats to feed sharks and fishes. Santa's ho-ho-ho come out in bubble through his snorkel over his white beard. The aquarium, located in the northern part of the island, hosts more than 175 different species of various marine animals.
Butterflies are probably the most popular among all insect species on Earth due to their beauty and color. Millions of monarch butterflies have flocked to a Mexican forest, creating a magical sight, drawing tourists, scientists, and locals there. The monarch butterflies flee the cold winters of Canada and northern United States and travel thousands of kilometers to hibernate and reproduce in the temperate woods of central Mexico. Hundreds of trees crowded with butterflies can be seen along Mexico's 13,000-hectare monarch reserve after their long journey. However, experts warn of a drop in the number of the species. Climate change is reported to have had an impact on their butterflies' migration pattern, as well as a reduction in their milkweed breeding habitat in the United States.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields, like animals' life, cultural events, funny trendy news, and more from every corner of the world.
With the Christmas season in full swing, hundreds have gathered on Spain's Gran Canaria island to watch stunning sand sculptures representing the birth of Christ. Eight sand artists from around the world have created these spectacular figures. It took them a week to complete the scenes. A huge sand wall is built around the sculptures to protect them. The island has been holding the event every year since 2006. The warm temperatures on the Spanish beach have helped attract a lot of visitors over Christmas. According to the organizers, at least 200,000 people have visited the exhibition in the past 15 years. A joyful day at an Australian zoo as a baby pygmy hippo is born. That's good news for the zoo staff because pygmy hippos are endangered species. Cambiri, the mother hippo, gave birth to the calf last month. It's her second calf, and the first one was born in a Sydney zoo 4 years ago. The newborn is yet to be named. It sticks to the mum and follows her wherever she goes. The calf is spending most of its time out of the sight of the public, as for now it's learning to walk and swim. And the mum keeps a close eye on the calf at all times.
The first few days, she did not leave the calf's side. Was very sedate, very quiet, and just looking after its every need. And only in the last sort of couple of days as she started to get a little bit more sleep in.
They are regarded as endangered animals because of illegal hunting and loss of habitat. Currently, less than 3,000 pygmy hippos are living in the wild.
Is it interesting to experience what Harry Potter went through at Hogwarts? Well, it could be, at least for students at a university in Pakistan, kicking off a festival celebrating the fictional wizard. The students at Government College University made their 150-year-old campus look like the magical school created by British author J.K. Rowling. They put on costumes and set up decorations reminiscent of Hogwarts. The university's vice chancellor says the campus, with its vast halls and soaring archways, has always reminded the students of the fictional school.
Most of these youngsters, they grew up at the time when J.K. Rowling's work was being presented in the novels and then later on in the film. So that magical charm, that fantasy, they really enjoyed. They grew up reading that fantasy. And then when they come to Government College University and see these architecture, it reminds me of that Hogwarts that is being filmed in Harry Potter films.
The university officials spoke proudly of what his students have done. They were themselves happy too, calling their experience fun. Others said it was unbelievable to be in Hogwarts. The festival also screened Pakistan's first fan-made Harry Potter film made and acted by the students. The Swedish city of Stockholm has launched its 31st annual Christmas competition of baking gingerbread.
There is a limited in space, so it's 40 centimeters by 40 centimeters, and everything you build, all the material need to be eatable. So you can build with different things, gingerbread of course, but also candies and other things, but you need to be able to eat it. So that's one of the rules as well.
Each year, the Gingerbread House competition, hosted by ArcDes Museum of Architecture and Design, has a theme for the designs. This year's theme is Together, attracting various interpretations of the topic. So far, the entries have included the Titanic, the famous coffee shop from the American TV show Friends, an igloo, and the Berlin Wall, all entirely edible. The event, which has been running for 31 years, is designed for all kinds of creators, such as children, young people, adults, amateurs, and professionals. The Tasty exhibition runs until January the 5th. A Palestinian teacher has developed an assistant for himself nicknamed Mr. Robot, bringing joy to the children of a school in Gaza. Mr. Robot teaches the children of Al-Basma School about electric circuits and helps them memorize their lessons. Mr. Robot moves freely in the classroom, speaking Arabic to students and communicating with them as a friend. The teacher creating it says the aim was to stimulate creativity and innovation in his classroom.
Mr. Robot, as his name suggests, is the teacher's assistant and not his replacement. He assists in the education process by asking questions and giving answers, greeting students and interacting with them in all aspects of a class.
The teacher says at first students reacted to it in a strange way, but later on they said it was like a dream come true for them. Local engineers say the robot is the first of its kind in the Gaza Strip, where electrical tools and components are scarce.
Artificial intelligence has found its way into several aspects of our lives. Now, a French research team is working on a project to provide fishermen with intelligent trawls that could help them sort out fishes before they are brought to the boats.
The objective of the project is to try to provide a support tool for fishermen, because at the moment, when they put their fishing gear in the water, a trawl net is like a large net. It is towed behind the vessel for several hours without having knowledge of what enters the trawl net in real time. Namely, is it species that are targeted by the fishermen or not targeted?
The trawl has a camera that can capture footage underwater, which is then analyzed by a microcomputer using artificial intelligence. If targeted fishes are detected, the trawl will switch to fishing mode. But when there are no targeted species, it will switch back to flight mode to avoid having an impact on the seabed. Another feature of this technology is to identify and classify pelagic species. For instance, horse mackerel can be displayed in blue on the screen, while the sardines are shown in pink. If you enjoy nighttime adventures, then this park in Paris is just for you. Decorated with colorful lighting, the venue gives you a real feeling of life-size sculptures depicting dinosaurs and other prehistoric animals. In this exhibition, dubbed Evolution on the Path of Lights, visitors can walk through tunnels formed by some of the sculptors. They are made of paper, steel, and lights. More than 100 sculptors light up like lanterns across the park. These include well-known favorites of kids, such as Triceratops and T-Rex. Some huge lanterns also represent insects and vertebrates that walked on the planet millions of years ago. The exhibition's director says the goal is to raise awareness and educate the public about biodiversity in the past and present.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Almighty. Dear friends, salam. So welcome to this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. We're going to speak about drug addiction and drug addiction in the view of Islam. So please be with us. Thank you. Today, Monday, is the 8th of Jamadi al-Awwal, 1443 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 22nd of Azar, 1400 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 13th of December, 2021 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. This is chapter Al-Baqarah, verse 219.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. يسألونك عن الخمر والميسر قل فيهما إثم كبير ومنافع للناس وإثمهما أكبر من نفعهما ويسألونك ماذا ينفقون قل العفو كذلك يبين الله لكم الآيات لعلكم تتفكرون.
They ask you about wine and gambling. Say, in them is great sin, and yet some benefit for people, but their sin is greater than their benefit. And they ask you what they should spend. Say, the excess beyond needs. Thus Allah makes it clear to you the verses of revelation that you might give thought.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
There are so many traditions and narrations from the Prophet and also from the Holy Imams condemning the use of wine or intoxicants, and as to what a miserable fate awaits the individual on the Day of Judgment. Muhammad al-Mustafa, the Holy Prophet of Islam, peace and salutations of Allah be upon him and his pure progeny, for example, is narrated to have said, all intoxicants are prohibited, and curse of Allah is on liquor, on him who manufactures it, on him who helps its manufacturers, on its seller, its purchaser, its distributor, the use of its money, its loader, its bearer, and its consumer. Among different addictions, we look at the addiction to modern tools. It is important to know that drugs and alcohol are used as a means of escape from overwhelming difficulties and responsibilities. The attitude of one who has truly embraced the teachings of Islam cannot be compatible with this state of despair. A true Muslim places his reliance on Allah for the relief of hardship. When the Holy Prophet proclaimed Allah's commandment concerning intoxicants, his followers broke their pots and jugs of wine until the streets flowed with it. This is the example for the new convert to Islam. Islam understands that it may not be easy for a person to break away from addiction, so it does not exclude or discourage the use of outside resources, such as counseling or rehabilitation. But the most potent tool is prayer and begging Allah's mercy.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Regarding the positive effects of religious teachings on abandoning addiction to drugs, it must be indicated that now we find that there are some other practices that are quite harmful for people, and anything harmful for the person should be abandoned and shouldn't be practiced. There are various reasons. One of them is that those drugs bring about social corruption and social deterioration. Okay, the bonds of social integrity would be loosened, would turn the whole community into a very disintegrated and shattered group of people who apparently live with each other but nobody cares for anybody else. Another one is simply that when someone wants to enjoy himself in an illogical and non-religious way, and particularly in this case, especially in this case, by means of being addicted, it entails spending money. Okay, now first of all, it isn't a rational job, it isn't a rational practice to spend money for harming oneself, okay, and for harming the whole community in the long run. Okay, so we find that it's a kind of splashing money here and there without any use, without any outcome.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio. Today's special.
Now, today's special looks at addiction as crime. Of course, according to Islamic point of view, reference was made that when the use of drugs became a social problem in traditional Muslim societies, Muslim scholars started to look into its legal status in the Sharia. Scholars have divided all actions into five categories known as legal norms. Either something is necessary to do, forbidden to do, or permissible to do. Those that are permissible are either recommended or disliked. Violating any legal norms entails a sin, but not necessarily a crime. God may forgive it out of divine grace when one sincerely repents. All crimes are deemed as sins, but are distinguished from sins in that they have legal as well as theological implications. With regards to drugs, scholars use a number of criteria to establish that it is forbidden, such as haram to health, haram to the health of others, waste of wealth, the presence of sedative effects, the taking of one beyond one's senses, the distortion of rational thinking, intoxication and clouding of the mind, and distortion of physical and motor skill.
واشتد على العزيمة جوانهي قم على خدمتك جوارهي.
As previous episode of today's special, we look at tips for helping someone overcome drug addiction. Dear brother, dear sister, don't let their care and well-being come before your own. Perhaps it has been a long time since you put your own well-being first. Due to your concern for a loved one wrapped up in drug addiction, but not only is it a mistake to forfeit your own well-being, but it is unfortunate to miss out on the many opportunities for the help and support that are available. Even as your loved one is involved with treatment, there are opportunities for family therapy, individual therapy, support groups for friends and family of addicts, and integrated family programming to reinforce their long-term transformation. It is in everyone's best interest that you give sufficient attention to your own needs, your physical health, and your mental health. The way forward is together, and best path is one of the positive transformation all around.
I read an article about a girl in South Carolina. I don't know if some of you have read this article. In South Carolina, she was a straight A student. She was on the honor roll. She went to a few parties. She went to a few bad sessions, bad gatherings. And she started doing drugs. And some people, they say, yes, this drug, you know, it's not harmful. The other ones are harmful. All drugs are harmful. Everything that you're placing in your body, which is a chemical that could potentially destroy your body, this is harmful, and this is something that one must avoid. She goes, she's there, she takes the drugs. Other people, they place something else. I don't know, they call it lacing the drug. They put something else in it. She doesn't know. They put something else. She's at a party. They put something else. They put something where it makes her addicted. Now she has become an addict. And there are certain drugs, I don't know, I'm not an expert on this, but from what I've heard, like cocaine, and there's other drugs, you take it once and you've become addicted. That's it. You've become addicted after taking it once. So this young girl, she became addicted to crystal meth, which is a drug. Now she starts hallucinating. Now she starts seeing things. She becomes so addicted that now she starts hallucinating and seeing things. So what did she end up doing? She ended up taking out her own eyes. She ripped out her own eyes. This was all over the news in South Carolina. A 20-year-old young girl. She took out her own eyes because she thought that the only way that she could be saved is if she makes a sacrifice and through giving away her eyes or something like that. And they find her, they take her to the hospital, and they see that her eyes, she can't use them anymore. Why? Because of one, two times she went and she tried a drug which was so harmful to herself and to her life and to her family and to her future. And it ended up destroying her life. So then she made an interview after, and she said, the only thing that made me stop doing drugs was the fact that I lost my eyes. Is that what it has to take? Some people, they have the ability to stop, but they don't stop until they end up ruining their lives. And I have seen lives that have been destroyed, lives that have been ruined. You see, this person, a very smart young student, a very smart youth, they end up throwing their whole future away because of one or two times they go and they try drugs. They throw away their future. They end up ruining the lives of their family.
We look at the addiction in the view of Islam in the program of today's special. Inshallah, we continue this topic. Thank you very much for joining us till this time, and till another chance to say salam. We leave you in Allah's protection. Have a nice time.
Some might say this world today is sure. God's left us to our mistakes, oh, and He's never been so far away. Some might say, how could any father stand? See his children across many lands, suffer so, give no help in hand, no help in hand. Somewhere tonight, far away and out of sight, there's a child that's too weak to cry. Deep in those eyes, can't you see him in disguise, reaching out to the heart that's in you and I. In every tear that is wet, he is there.
You heard
was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio.